Could I have a chumash? Have one. So the title we learned tonight is dedicated Le'ilui Nishmasa Shelo Isha Chashuv Esara Bas Reb Isar Be'er Shetanoach B'Sholom Al Mishkoven. She should be a Melitzis Yosher for her wonderful family. They should only know Nachas and Simcha. We also dedicate tonight Shiela Refuah Shleima for Nava Malka Bas Chana Shekodesh Baruch Hu Shlach Lo Refuah Shleima Min HaShamayim L'Ramach Evareya V'Shasa Gideya. And she should be well and back with her family for many more wonderful years to come. This week's parasha is one of the sources in which we learn the Isser of Ribis. Im kesef tal ve'es ami, esa oni imach, lo yisiyah lo kenoisha, lo yisishim sesimun olav neshech. And this is one of the sources, once again, in Chumash Devorim, in Mishneh Torah, but in Parshas Mishpotim. Many of Yesodos HaMishpot are in Parshas Mishpotim, goes without saying. That's the name of the Parsha, Ve'ela Mishposho Mashutosim Bifneim. So this Parsha includes many mitzvahs, many monetary issues, U'beineim, the Isser of Ribis. And today we will have a brief overview. What is the essence of Isser Ribis? Is it about Choshen Mishpat or about Yered Deya? Is Isser Ribis the same family as Geneva, Gezeila? The money is not legitimate, or is it more a matter of Yoredei of Issa v'Heter? Because in the modern world, Ribis is so natural. I mean, why would you expect to use another person's house without paying rent? Why would you expect a person to give you his car without paying, you know, Schirut Rechev? So why would money be different? In the modern world, it's totally legitimate and goes without saying that if a person lends money, he is entitled to get interest on his money. But according to Mishpat HaTorah, according to our halacha, Ribis is one of the harshest isurim. So the question is Ribis considered money that is not legitimate, or is it something, even Bein Odom L'Mokim, something that has to do with Issa V'Heter and not with Choshen Mishpat? So offhand, one might assume that this is a machlokes that Rambam the Tur, because the Rambam writes all the halachas of Ribis in Sefer HaMishpotim Hilchas Malve Veloive, while the Tur took it out of Choshen Mishpat and put it in Yored Deya. So why doesn't the Tur write Hilchas Ribis in Hilchas Halvoa, following the footsteps of the Rambam that writes all the dinim of Ribis in Hilchas Malve Veloive Asher B'Sefer HaMishpotim? So one might assume that this is a fundamental different attitude, fundamentally different approach to the definition, to defining the entire concept of Ribis. While according to the Rambam, it belongs to the same category as Geneva, V'Gzela, V'Ona'a, V'Ribis. According to the Torah, no, it is entirely in the realm of Issur V'Heter, and that's why it's in Yored Deya. But it's unlikely, because the Bachan Semekuf Samach in Yored Deya, so Hilchas Ribis starts in Siman Kuf Nun Tes. Kuf Nun Tes is just about the difference between Jews and Gentiles. And one is not entitled to take Ribis from Jews, but he could take Ribis from a non-Jew. And then in Kuf Samach, the Torah writes, Hoyel v'osel yodon, we will be mefarish the Issa of Ribis. And the Bach explains that the Torah is somewhat apologetic, and the Torah means to say, why don't I write the Isser of Ribis in Choshen Mishpat, just like the Rambam did, including all the halachos of Ribis in Hilchas Malva Veloive in Sefer HaMishpotim? So the Torah apologizes, and he says, Because Yoredei Semakuf Nurches deals with various halachas regarding which Jews and Gentiles have different dinim, different halachas, and ribis is one of them. Therefore, mikivan sheveinu isur ribis, that there is a difference between Jew and non-Jew, that is why I put all the dinim of ribis into Yoredei. So if the Torah apologizes why he differs from the Rambam, then obviously this is not a fundamentally different approach to ribis. Because if that would be the case, the two wouldn't have to apologize. But on the other hand, when I analyze this tour, I think it is so unreasonable that because regarding ribis, there's a difference between Jew and non-Jew. Is that reasonable? That is why all the halachas of ribis, which are extremely complicated halachas, and it's 15 se'ifim in Shulchan Aruch, and going into great details, more than 15, 17 simonim in Shulchan Aruch. So would it be reasonable that the Torah writes all the halachas of ribis in Yoredei because regarding ribis is a difference between Jews and non-Jews? That is extremely unreasonable. In Geneva v'Gzela, and I know there's also a difference between Jews and non-Jews, and they're all on Chosh Mishpat. So maybe, I think it should go the other way around. And the fact that Hilchos Ribis are in Yoredei would prove that Hilchos Ribis fundamentally belong in Yoredei. They belong in the realm of Issa v'Heter and not of Dina Mominis. So why does the Rambam write them in Hilchos Malva v'Loiva? So I have realized in the basic Ashkof of the Rambam that the Rambam usually defines the different halachas in his magnificent Mishneh Torah, and the Rambam usually sets up the Seder, the order of Mishneh Torah, not based on the lamdas, on the concepts and halachic definitions of halachas, but more based on the practicality. And this is an observation I dealt with several different places in my Svarim. So, according to the Rambam, the reason Ribis is in Malva v'Loiva is very simple, because these halachas apply only to Malva v'Loiva. So the Rambam's basic approach to the Seder in Mishneh Torah is that he dictates the Seder of Mishneh Torah based on the practical approach and not on the essence and the basic definitions of the various halachas. So according to the Rambam, Hilchos Ribis should be in Malva v'Loiva for a very simple reason. Ribis applies only bein Malva v'Loiva and nowhere else. And it is halachas that apply to halvaot. And that's why it should be in halachas malva v'loiva. So I think the Torah comes to apologize. I should have followed in the footsteps of the Rambam and put ribis and choshen mishpat as well in halachas halvaot. However, by essence, halachas ribis does belong in Yoredei. And because I anyway needed to mention here a day the difference between Jew and non-Jew regarding Hilchos Ribis, and that is why I decided to put Hilchos Ribis into your day where they essentially belong, and not like the Rambam that put them into Choshen Mishpat, because that is where they practically belong. So that would be my understanding, that it's more reasonable to assume that the Torah put Hilchos Ribis in your day because that is why they belong by their very essence and their very nature, and the philosophy is Ribis. It's not a Choshen Mishpat one, but rather Issur v'Heter. But let's delve deeper into this question. So in Bava Metzia Samach Aleph Omed Aleph, we find a fascinating sugya. And the Gemara asks, Lameli de Osro Teure Lav Begezel Oinua v'Ribis. So the Gemara asks, why do we need three lavim, three mitzvot lo ta'aseh? Gezel, Oinoa, and Ribis. Gezel is robbing or stealing. Ribis is taking interest. Oinoa is when you cheat a person regarding the price of a purchase. So, it is an open question. Is the Torah socialistic or capitalistic? But we're not going to go into that now because I don't discuss politics in Rabin. But on one hand, there is a din of Oinoa, and you cannot take any price you want to take. And I wrote a tshuva, and it was printed, I think, in the second volume of Shalos Tshuvos Mechasosha regarding the practicalities of a Noah Bizman Hazeh in a free market in which everybody is entitled, besides a very limited basket of essentials that are bepikuach memshalti, which includes most of the essential foods, whether it's bread or milk products or that are bepikuach memshalti. But regarding anything else, you know, it's a free market. It's a capitalistic market. So there is a din of ainua, but how do we define a price? So according to halacha, if you took more than a shishit, more than shtus, then bitul mekach, the whole purchase is invalid. And the one that was cheated, overpaid, then he is entitled to retract. If it's exactly a shtus, 1/6, then the purchase is valid and he cannot regret, he cannot back out, but he deserves to get his money back. That means what was taken more than what should have been taken. And if it's less than a shtus, then it's mechila. So that is Ainua. And the Gemara asks, why do we need an Issa for Gezel, Ainua, and Rebis? And the Gemara defines, and the Gemara says they're not the same. Because Gel is money that was taken by force, by coercion. Ainua was money that the purchaser gave out of free will, but he wasn't aware that he's being cheated. Rebis, he was aware that he's paying more than he took. And Afar Piken, the Torah asks Rebis. So they're not the same. But the basic question, when the Gemara asks, why do we need three Asurim for Gezel, Ainua, and Rebis? Doesn't that prove that they both are of the same nature? All three are of the same nature. Because if they are not at all of the same nature, and Rebis belongs to Issa v'Heter, while Gezel and Ainua definitely belong to Chosh Mishpat, what is the question in the first place? So this seems to be clear that in the way Chazal see these three different Isurim, Averis, they are of the same nature. And Ribis, in a way, is similar to Gezel. This is money you are not entitled to get. So the Gemara does differentiate. We cannot learn Ainua and Ribis from Gezel. We cannot learn Ribis from Ainua and Gezel because they are different. But essentially, they are of the same nature. One might argue, when the Gemara does differentiate, and the Gemara says, Gezel is Baal Korchon, Ainua is Beli Yidiyosoi, but Rebis, this is what he chose, out of his free will. So maybe when the Gemara answers this Teretz, and the Gemara does differentiate, Rebis stands apart. Tosfos HaRosh, on the spot, says that Rebis doesn't really belong to this equation, because to him it's simple. Rebis has nothing to do with Gezel. Rebis is money if a person chose to give. He took the loan, and this were the conditions of the loan, and this is what he undertook. So Rebis really doesn't really belong to the equation. Ula Rav Chedemilta, Chazal asked about Rebis. So that is a clear indication that the feeling of the Rosh is that Rebis is Issa v'Heter, and Rebis has nothing to do with Geneva and Gzela. So the Gemara says, in the beginning of Eizei Neshech, Ribis Ktsutze Yotzed Bidayonim. If the lender took Ribis and he gave money, he gave his loan on the condition that Ribis is paid, even when the borrower paid Ribis, the lender needs to give that money back. Why does he have to give that money back? The Gemara learns it from V'chai Ochicho Imach. You need to give that money back. But this is a special pasuk that we learn in the parasha of Ribis, that the borrower that paid Ribis is entitled to get his money back. The Rambam doesn't bring this in minyan amitzvos. He does not bring a mitzvah to say to give back Ribis that you already collected. And the Ramban, mitzvahs asay Yud Zayin, Sheshochach HaRambam, according to the opinion of the Ramban adds on. This is a mitzvah that the Rambam omitted and mistakenly omitted. It should be in the list of the mitzvah say. That's the argument of the Ramban. comes along the Megillas Esther, one of the major commentators of the Rambam and Sefer HaMitzvos, and the Megillas Esther says, according to the Rambam, the reason the lender has to give back Rebbe is because it's Gezel. This money is Gezel B'Yuda, and that is why he needs to give it back. But the Gemara doesn't say it's V'heishos Gezela. The Gemara says V'chayuchichu Emach, and that is a different posuk and it's a different source from which we learn that the lender has to return that Rebbe. So according to the Megillas Esther, I'm trying to explain the Rambam's point of view, V'chayu chichu imach is just a gilui milta. But after we learn from V'chayu chichu imach, sheribis kusi yotzer v'dionam, it falls back into the category of Geneva and Gezela, and that is why it is only gilui milta. It is not defined as a mitzvah to say. That is the approach of the Megillas Esther explaining why the Rambam doesn't bring the mitzvah incumbent upon the malva, upon the lender, to give back ribis that he already collected. Which brings us to another question. And how do we know that oinua goes back when a person that sold an object or a car or whatever it is, and he took a shtus, more than the normal price, than the market price, that he has to give that money back? By oinua, we only find a lav. There is no indication in the Torah, no pasuk from which we learn that if he collected that money, he needs to give it back. So the Pnei Yeshua in Bava Metzia Daf Nun Vav writes, if the Torah says lo yisoynu, then it's gzeila. And if it's gzeila, it needs to go back. So why by ribis we do need a pasuk? Because ribis and oinua are not the same. And once again, the Gemara in Bava Metzia Samach Aleph explains, Geneva v'gzeila was money that was taken without the consent of the proper owner. That is Geneva v'gzeila. Oinua was given by the consent of the person that paid. But if he would be aware that it's above the market price, then he wouldn't be willing to pay. So we did have his consent, but it was cheated and he mistakenly consented, and that is why it is somewhat similar to Geneva v'Gzeila. Like a Mekech Tos, Ribis is different. Ribis was given out of total awareness. He knew how much he's getting, and he agreed to pay back more. So those opinions that do argue that Ribis is similar to Gezel assume, bearing in mind, and this is the reality of life, bearing in mind that when people are desperate for cash, they will pay, and sometimes they will pay horrendous and ridiculous prices. And we know the Shuk HaFor and the Shuk HaShechor, and as an Av Beis Din, sometimes I am just shocked at to what extremes people are willing to go when they are desperate for cash, and how bad people could be in taking advantage of others that are desperate for money. And people obliged to pay 20, 30, 40, 50% interest a year, which is impossible. Impossible. So maybe that is why the Torah considers Ribis Gezel. Yes, he agreed to pay. But he agreed to pay because he was in terrible desperation. And the Torah doesn't like the fact that people will take advantage of the desperation of others. And that is why the Torah considers Ribis as Gezel. And that's why it might be, yes, the same family as Oinua and Gezel, same would apply to Ribis. Bava Kama Kuf Yud Beis, Bava Metzia Samach Beis, the Gemara deals with the question, a person took Ribis. And it's Ribis Ktsutsa, Ribis Dioraisa. And according to the Torah, he needs to give that money back. And he passed away. Are his Yorshim obliged to give that money back? And the Gemara says no. But there are two different reasons in the Gemara, two different opinions. Why not? So the Yorshim inherited his estate. And some of the money they inherited was Ribis that he collected. And the Yorshim have clear records from who he collected that levis. Do they have to repay that money and give it back? The Gemara says no. So according to Roma Baruch Roma, it is because Yehush v'shin roshis. Roshis yorish kirishus loy kayach. So a person stole something and he sold that stuff that he stole. He sold that stuff to others. The purchaser doesn't have to give it back to the original owner. It is upon the thief to repay that money. And the original owner cannot collect that from the purchaser. And that is the concept of Yish and Shinu Rishis. Rava says the reason the Yoshim don't have to repay that money is because the Torah was Machayev, the lender, to give back the money that Rebbe collected. But Lebrei Loy Azer Rachmona, this mitzvah is not upon the children. So maybe this would be a source to determine, is Ribbis Choshe Mishpot or is it Yoredeya? If Ribbis would be Choshe Mishpot, then father and son have the same halacha. This is not legitimate money. This is money which you are not entitled to hold and to keep and to use. But if we say it's a mitzvah and it's Yoredeya, not Choshe Mishpot, then the mitzvah is upon the father. You are the one that transgressed. You are the one that needs to fix. And you need to repent and make good what you did bad. But the Yorshim, they didn't take the ribis, and therefore they would not be obliged to give it back. So, according to some of the Shoinim and many Achroinim, the Mishnah, L'melechem Perek Dalet El Chazmal V'Avoloi V'Nasiris, HaMishpot Choshe Mishpot Reish Ches, and the Ritvim Bova Mitzia Samach Veiz, this is their interpretation, that these two Amiroim, that is the question. Is it only a mitzvah to repay ribis, or is it also a monetary obligation? So we deal with the question, is ribis gezel when the lender already collected ribis? And now we go over to a different question, which is closely associated with question number one. And maybe there are two sides of the same coin. So yes, a person took a loan, and the loan is ribis, and he's not allowed to pay that loan. So it is very clear that the Issa ribis applies to the malv and to the loive, to the lender and to the purchaser. It's not only that there's an issa to collect ribis, there's also an issa to pay ribis. So wouldn't that prove that it's not choshe mishpat but yoredeya? If it would be choshe mishpat, mele there's an issa to collect ribis, why would there be an issa to pay ribis? So isn't this enough to prove that ribis is not choshe mishpot? Ribis is yoredeya, and that is why the issa would apply not only to the one making the money and collecting the ribis, even to the one paying ribis. However, the Chazon Ish argues, and this is something I wrote, and I was happy to find it, the Chazon Ish, no. Maybe, in its very essential nature, ribis is choshe mishpot. But because chumras hacheit, and because the Torah is aware that people out of desperation will do anything, that is why the Torah puts the Isser on the lender as well. Even though fundamentally it's about, that is why the Torah asks the borrower as well, even though fundamentally it is about the lender. Because the ribis, in a way, would be similar to Gneiva and Gzela and Oinoa. So how about ribis before it has been collected? So the Torah asks us paying ribis, Torah asks us collecting ribis. Does that mean that there is no chov v'shiabud mamoni at all? Or is it a struggle between choshe mishpat and yoredeya? While choshe mishpat says, this was the condition upon which you got a loan. You obliged and you promised to pay ribis. Otherwise you wouldn't get this money. So choshe mishpat says, this money should be paid. Yoredeya intervenes and Yoredeya says, no, I don't want the borrower to pay this money. And when choshe mishpat and Yoredeya struggle, Yoredeya has the upper hand. Because Yoredeya reflects HaKadosh Baruch Hu's values, and not only monetary issues and shiabudim. Or would we say There is no such thing that Yoredeh and Choshe Mishpot struggle against each other. The Torah is one, and it is whole. And no, this is impossible that Choshe Mishpot says, you gotta pay, and Yoredeh says, you can't pay. So the Chazon Ish argues, no. If the Torah Ased Rivis goes without saying that there no longer can be any Shiabud, it's not Shiyesh Shiabud, Aval Asur Lemamesh Et HaShiabud. But that is what the Ritva says in Kiddushin Davov Amid Beis. But the Chazon Ish is so convinced that this is impossible, so the Chazon Ish offers a very far-fetched pshat in the Ritva. In these shiurim, you know, we're not sitting in Kohel, and you don't have the text before your eyes. We just come here just to be mishtasher b'divrei Torah. So I'm not going to go into the specific details and the lashonis of the Ritva. But all the achronim for 300 years understood the Ritva. The Ritva says, yes, yes, shiabud. Aber Torah oseret lamamesh et ha-shiabud. Torah oseret ligvot, Torah oseret lishalem. Aber mitzad gidrei ha-mamon, yes, shiabud. And the Chazon Ish says, no, this is impossible. And it's a philosophical argument. The Chazon Ish says the Torah is mikshu achas, it is whole. It cannot be that on one hand there is a monetary lien, and Yoredeh says, yes, there is a monetary obligation, but this is a monetary obligation which cannot be manifested, it cannot be realized. The Torah answers. So that is quite clear on Ritva. But the Chazon Ish in two different sources, Yoredeh Siman Ayin, Evan Ezra Siman Mem Beis, Ois Aleph, Chazon Ish says, no, this is impossible. So if the Torah wouldn't ask the Rivis, there definitely would be a Chiyuv. But after the Torah asks the Rivis, the monetary lien is annulled, and it is no longer. Which brings us to question number three. So what would be the situation if the Torah would not aser ribis? Would there be a chiyuv to pay ribis? Most sensible people would say, of course, and why not? And that is what the Rashba writes in Tshuvas HaMiuchasos. So we have a sefer for hundreds of years, Shalosh Tshuvas HaMiuchasot LaRamban. But for the past 200 years, we know that this is Tshuvas HaRashba. And there's many proofs that this is Tshuvas HaRashba. We still call it a Tshuvot HaMiuchasot, because that is what it was called for 500 years. So we still quote Shal Tshuvas HaMiuchasot LaRamban, but we know it's Tshuvas HaRashba. Reish Chav Gimel, the Rashba writes, Ribbis, by its very nature, is Schirus. Yes, Schirus Batim, Schirus Kalim, Schirus Poalim, and Schirus Mamon would be no different than the three others. As I said at the beginning of the shiur, you move to Yerushalayim for a few weeks. You want a place to stay. You rent an apartment or you go to a hotel. You might be lucky and have a cousin or a father or a shver that'll let you use his house. But that is only out of friendship and love, but it's only natural. You want a place to stay, you pay for it. You rent a car, so there are rentals. You could either buy a car or rent a car. But only a very close friend or a family member would let you use his car, not for an extended period of time. And when you want workers to fix up your apartment, that is chiles poyalim. You pay, and people are entitled to get compensation for giving away their possessions or their labors and efforts and energies. So why would you expect to get money without paying for the money you are using? So the Rashba makes it very clear. The Torah had good reasons to aser ribis. But if there would be no issue of ribis, it definitely would be a monetary obligation. And that's why it's a big surprise. Tshuvas Chasam Sofer, Chelek Vov Semachavov. And the Chasam Sofer writes, even if the Torah wouldn't aser ribis, there would be no chiyuv to pay ribis. And even if a person stipulated he's giving you a loan and he wants 5% ribis, reasonable, 5% annually, it's not too much, but there would be no chiyuv to pay ribis. And why not? So the Chasam Sofer writes, when you rent a house or a car, there is pchat, blai. What's that in English?
Appreciation.
Yeah? Appreciation? I don't think so. Wear and tear. So the car is somewhat diminished. You know, second-hand car, not the same. And you check the meter, how many kilometers did this car do? I never had a car, but I have people driving me around all the time. So the same is with a house. Person lives in your house 6 months. You have to paint the place, clean it up. There is wear and tear. But money is money. You're getting back the same money you gave. So why would you want to make profit? That's the argument of the Chasam Sofer. Seems to be a far-fetched argument, because the justification of collecting rent is not because of wear and tear. Because usually when you rent out a house, your contract stipulates that he needs to fix up the place when he gives it back on top of the rent he's paying. So the rent he's paying has nothing to do with the depreciation of the car, for instance. So when you rent a car, you're not paying for the depreciation of the car, diminishing its value, but rather for using the car of another person. And a person has the right to make profit from his possessions as from his labors. And it definitely applies to Schiris Poyalim. So the reason you pay workers is not because their koyach is diminished. Sometimes you just hone your skills by working, and you become better at the job by working. And if it's manual labor, sometimes you will become stronger by working. So the reason you pay Schiris Poyalim is not for the depreciation, but people are entitled to profit from their labors and from their possessions as well. So the Chasam Sofer is a big chiddush to argue that regarding money, you're getting back exactly what you gave. So why do you want to make rent? Besides the point, in reality, it is money more than anything else. You're not sure at all that you're going to get back what you're giving. So you're renting a car, you're going to get back the car. Well, check the trunk, whether the spare tire is still there. But when you lend money, you're not at all sure that you're going to get back your money. And that is why you do deserve to get interest. So the Rashba probably is right by assuming if the Torah wouldn't ask Rebis, then Rebis definitely would be legitimate. And the Chasam Sofer seems the big chiddush in Chelek Vav Siman Chav. So we discussed the fundamentals and the basic yesodis of Rebis, but I just want to briefly address some of the more pressing issues in this modern world regarding questions of Rebis. So more than 500 years ago, we find the Heterisk. And the Heterisk is a very complex legal document. And many people mistakenly think that the Heterisk is a naive, tmimizdik document. It is not, and it was never meant to be. When Gedolei Yisrael became aware hundreds of years ago that there is a need to enable the flow of money, and it is to the benefit of society, and not only to the society, it is the benefit to the poor, they felt a need to devise a method, a formula, to enable Rebis, and that is what Heterisk is all about. It's not a tmimizdik document. And it is totally similar to what we learn in the last Perek of Masechet Shavuos. Kishenimnuhu am melahalvois omad hila lazokin v'tiken pruzbol. So there's a din of Shemitah's Ksofim. So every 7th year, all loans are annulled. So if you own a person $1 million and you didn't pay that loan and Shavuos arrived, Shnas HaShemitah, the loan is annulled, invalidated, and you no longer have to pay that loan. And this was a probably strictly social mitzvah. So we ask whether the Torah is capitalistic or socialistic. It is a combination. But Hillel HaZoker became aware that 2 or 3 years before Shemitah, people are not willing to lend money. And the poor and the needy and the desperate were in dire straits because they couldn't get any loans, because people were afraid that these loans won't be paid till Shnas HaShvi'is, and then the money will be lost. So this very same mitzvah that was originally intended to be to the benefit of the poor was hurting the poor because people were afraid to lose their money and they weren't giving any loans far before Shnas HaShemitah. So Hillel came up with a formula that every lender has the means by signing a simple document to ensure that he's going to get his money back and to circumvent the din of Shemitah's Ksofer. That is what the Prozbul was about, and that is exactly what happened 500 years ago regarding Gribis. So the Heter Iske is a complex formula in which you're not exactly getting Gribis, but in practicality, you're collecting Gribis. And that was what the Heter Iske was meant to be. So today I know there are many Rabbonim are Machmir, and if it's not really an Iske, it's a B'dievet. No, Heter Iske was never meant to be an Iske. Heter Iske is a formula that was meant to enable the flow of money. And when our Gedolim became aware that because of the Iser of his people are not lending substantial monies, because when the world economy developed in a way that commerce flourished and people needed capital, they needed money, so it became a big business paying interest for money. And people no longer were willing to lend money without interest. And that is when they formulated the Heter Iske. So, in Israel, all the banks and most of the monetary institutions have a Heter Iske. It is still questionable when a financial institution has a Heter Iske, but they don't really know what it is and what it means. They just see it as somewhat of a religious document which they sign. Is the Heter Iske really valid? Does it stick? Does it work? Is the Heter Iske needed when we're lending or borrowing from banks which are all corporations and public companies? So in Shas Tshuvas Minchas Sosho, Chelek Aleph Siman Kuf Hei Siman Kuf Vov, I wrote a lengthy essay about the halachic status of a chevra ba'am, especially public companies that are on the stock market. So, is there an issa to lend or borrow with ribis from a public company or a bank? Because all banks in Israel and most of the banks in the world are not privately owned. Most of them, especially major banks, are public companies. So, is there an issa of ribis? And I brought that almost 200 years ago, a major discussion developed between Gedolim regarding public companies, even though the structure then wasn't as clear as the legal structures are today, but we find some fascinating tshuvas. Starting off with the Maram Shik. Maram Shik was one of the great Talmidim of the Sam Sofer, and the Siman Kuf Nun Chesen Yoredeh, the Maram Shik, deals with a company that is owned by shareholders. And the Maram Shik argues shareholders are lenders. When they buy shares, they are lending money to the company. And therefore, the shareholders are not defined as the ones that own the company. And so when you pay ribis to a company, it is not considered as if the shareholders are collecting the ribis, because they are lenders. And one of the great disciples of the Maram Shik was the Maharsha, Reb Shimon Greenfeld, was one of the Gedolim in Hungary. And Yoredeh Siman Gimel, he wonders about the opinion of his Rebbe. So he asks, if the people buying shares are the lenders, who exactly are the borrowers? Shareholders. Yeah, they borrow the money. So they lend the money and they borrow the money. So how could the same body or persons be the lenders and the borrowers at the same time? So obviously the company is the borrower. So who is the company? So, and this is a discussion in which many Gedolim of that time participated. So according to the Maram Shik, the shareholders, what is clear from his tshuva, are not the owners of the company. In modern law, the shareholders are not the owners. They own the company, but they do not own what the company owns. The company is a legal and economic entity, and the monies and the possessions of the company are owned by the company. Shareholders are investors, and shares are a monetary instrument. Shareholders own the company, but the shareholders don't own the money that the company has. The company is a legal and economic entity into itself. And that is why the shareholders are not liable. They don't bear personal liability. So actually, how do we define balus traditionally? How is ownership defined by the Torah? How do we define balus? One of the manifestations of balus. So if a person owns something, he is entitled to reap the benefit and the profits of his possession. If you own a field, then the produce of the field belongs to you. And if you own a tree, then the fruit that the tree brings forth is yours. But you didn't purchase the fruit. You didn't do a kinyan in the fruit, but the fruit comes out of the tree. And the one that owns the tree obviously would own the fruit. And the one that owns the field obviously would own the grain growing on his field. So the one that owns money obviously would own the profit. So the shareholders are the ones that will reap the harvest. And the profit is theirs because their shares will appreciate in value. But ownership is also defined by your right to dictate what to do with your money. Shareholders have no input in deciding what the company is to do with their money. Shareholders could only choose the directors, and the directors have sole authority to dictate policy. But even the directors could only dictate policy. But the one really to decide what to do is the CEO, who is appointed by the directors, who are elected by the shareholders. So the traditional manifestations of balus are split between three different bodies. The shareholders will be the ones to get the profits or the losses. The directors are the one to appoint the mankal and dictate policy. But they could only dictate policy, not more than that. They don't run the company, which the CEO does. So would the CEO be defined as the owner? That would be ridiculous. He gets a salary, nothing more. Would the directors be defined as the owners? Maybe somewhat more reasonable than making the CEO the owner, but still totally unreasonable because it's not their money. They don't bear the loss and they don't make their profit. So obviously it would be the shareholders. But by modern law, no. Shareholders own the company, but the company is a legal entity. And the monies are owned by the company. And therefore, in my opinion, me'ikar adin, there would be no iser of ribis, either lending or borrowing from a company, a public company. I don't feel the same regarding a private company, even though a private company has shares, but the shares are not free for all. If it's a public company, anybody could buy shares on the market. But if it's a private company, so the shares are only a structure. But if the company is owned by a person or a family or even a small group of partners, I think that would be defined as ownership, in my opinion. Even they would not bear liability for the losses of the company. But that is just a legal structure. But if it's a privately owned company, then I think they are the owners. And in that case, if they're Jewish, there would be an Isser of Ribis. That is my opinion. And I differentiate between a public company in which anybody could buy or sell shares on the market and a private company which is owned and totally controlled by a small group of people. So lately, there has been a question regarding credit unions, and that is somewhat of a different structure because in our modern world, there are so many different, I say Poskim today have to deal not only with complex issues that technology has brought forth. It's not only about technology and new medicines and new medical procedures and new technologies regarding Shabbos and Yom Tov, also new financial ideas and structures that were unheard of in the past. So a credit union is somewhat like a bank, but unlike a bank. And credit unions don't invest monies in projects like banks do. It's just like a partnership that supplies loans only to its members, those people that invested their money in this credit union. And the interest they collect is far more reasonable than the ones other financial institutions collect, because other financial solutions are profit-oriented. Credit unions are not really profit-oriented. It's just people that come together and invest their money just to enable them and the other members, other investors, to get loans. And that's why the interest is far lower. So are Jews allowed to take loans from a credit union in which there are many Jewish members, or give loans to credit unions in which there are many Jewish members? Would that be an issa v'libis? And I think regarding a credit union, they're not on the market. People don't buy shares. There are no shares for sale. It's just you invest money, and the money you put in is the money you get, and you also get part of the interest that the credit union collects. And that obviously would be a problem of ribis. So this question takes us elsewhere, and this is also a question discussed by those very same gedolim that I quoted, the Maram Shik, the Marshag, Chuvis Mahariyo Alevi. Rabbi Yitzchok Aden Ettinger was also one of the gedolim in Galicia 150 years ago, and his second chelik, Nun Dalet, Kuf Chov Beis, he has two chuvis about this issue. So some of the gedolim argued that the ribis only applies to Jewish money. Kaspacho loy titan loy ben neshech. That is the lashon of the posik. So it is only kaspacho. And if there is a goyish shutif, it's not exclusively Jewish money, there would be no issa v'libis. That's a chiddush of the Maram Shik. And it's a big chiddush. And his great Talmud disputes this chiddush as well. And he writes, this is a drosha that only Chazal could darshan. You can't make up such a drosha. Kaspachu loy titen loy b'neshech means you are not allowed to make profit and get interest on your money. So why would it make a difference if some of the money belongs to non-Jews? After all, you invested money and you are getting a profit and you're getting interest on your money. Shoyel HaMeshev has a gevaldig chiddush, and it's Shuvis Shoyel HaMeshev Madura Gimel Chelek Aleph. He argues if the majority of money is non-Jewish money, maybe Bitul Barav would apply, which is also a Svara Rechoike. Bitul Barav is a concept and is a heter, but not in money. There's a Gemara at the end of Beya. Money is never Bitul Barav. I mean, money is money, and even a minority shareholder, his money is not Bitul Barav. Bitul Barav wouldn't apply to money, so why would it apply to Issa Ribis? So this would be a big question, and it's not very clear whether there would be any heter to participate in a credit union.
Inside a small or private company, not in a loan format, an investment format. With an investment format, that would also be considered a risk of ribis in terms of...
If there's no guaranteed ribis, and you could lose or make money, then there would be no problem of ribis, even if they have a good track record, but it's korav l'aschar and korav l'hafsid. The problem is only when you have a savings account in a bank, or even a cheshbon over v'shav, and you have profit guaranteed. That would be a ribis. But if it's an investment firm, and they don't guarantee interest, and you could make or lose money, then there would be no problem of ribbis in that case.
And what about gemachim? There's no bias by gemachim when they give out a loan.
But gemachim don't take interest.
No, I'm saying, why can't they take interest on the basis that...
Why can't they take interest? How could they take interest? Because gemachim... you argue because it's public money. So... Okay. I think gemachim that are public funds probably could take interest, but then they will cease to be gemachim. It would no longer be a gemach. The entire idea of a gemach is gemelas chasadim, and they don't take interest. So I think that some gemachim do take a not interest, but a certain fixed cut just for covering expenses. And that is legitimate, because it's not based on, you know, on the month or year, and it's just a fixed cut just to cover expenses, and that definitely is legitimate. So we discussed the fundamental idea of ribbis, and also some various just relevant questions without giving psukim. I usually don't give piskei halacha at these shiurim, just discussing and sharing some fundamental understandings in halacha. So Parshas Mishpotim, in a way, is a continuation of Parshas Yisroi, and Moshe Rabbeinu coming down from Har Sinai, Ve'ela Mishpotim Asher Tosem Lefneim. And as I mentioned at the outset of this shiur in our opening comments, Parshas Mishpotim has many mitzvahs. Not only Choshev Mishpot, Issa V'Heter as well, and it is one of the parshas that contains a great part of Taryag Mitzvahs Shebetoira. And it is in this week's parsha that we actually find Kol Asher Dibar Hashem Naaseh V'Nishva. Parsha Shiso we read Kol Asher Dibar Hashem Naaseh. It is in this week's parsha that we find Kol Asher Dibar Hashem Naaseh V'Nishva. And we spoke many times about the essence of Naaseh V'Nishma. And Chazal say that when Bnei Yisrael were Makdim Naaseh V'Nishma, Kodesh Baruch Hu said, Mi gilo raz zela bonai, loshen shemalachi ashoras mishtam shimboi. Who revealed the secret to my children? That is the way the angels from above talk. What does that mean? So the Gemara says, the Pesuk says, Geboi rekoyach, oise devoroi, lishmoa bekoyen devoroi. And this Pesuk in Tehillim refers to Malachi Elyon, and they are defined as Geboi rekoyach, ose devoro, and only then, lishmoa bekoyen devoroi. So the angels are Magda Masa l'nishma. So who gave the Jews the inspiration to say, Kol asher dibar Hashem naaseh v'nishma, and Kodesh Baruch Hu says, Mi gilo razel abonai, loshen shemanach ashoros mishtam shaboy. So what is the secret of Naaseh V'Nishma? And why is that the loshen shemalachi hashoros mishtam shaboy? So last week we spoke about Simchas U'Avdis, and now I want to stress another point of Naaseh V'Nishma. So, as we said last week, Naaseh V'Nishma is a manifestation and a reflection of, yes, by our very nature, we have free will, and that is what is unique about humankind. So animals have instincts, but they don't have reasoning. It is only human beings that have reasoning and the ability to formulate their ideas and the ability to decide, do we or do we not, to do or not to do. So the Gaon writes an interpretation on the Pesuk, Tnu Oyiz LeElokim. So how could a person, Kiviyochel, give power and strength to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the source of all power in the world, Ein Oyid Malvadoi, and He is everything. And the interpretation of Elokim is Takef V'Bal Yecholet V'Bal HaKochot Kulam, as we find in Shulchan Aruch. So how could a person give oz le'elokim? So the Goran writes, Kiviyochel, in a way, and I stress, in a way, HaKadosh Baruch Hu controls everything, every facet and every aspect of creation. But there is only one facet that is beyond his control, that he does not control, and that is Bechirat HaAdam, because that is the way he wants it, and that is the way he chose. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one that gave us Bechirat Chofshit and free will. So there is one realm which is kiviyachol beyond HaKadosh Baruch Hu's direct control. He dictates everything that happens in the world, but he does not dictate our deeds and actions and our achievements and follies. And that is something which is our free will. So it is one realm which HaKadosh Baruch Hu kiviyachol put out of his jurisdiction. So the Gaon says, when we give back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu our free will, bebitul habechira, that is the way in which we could give oz le'elukim. And that is the gross interpretation of tnu oz le'elukim. Bitul habechira. And Rav Dessler expounds on this gra. And he explains, we all have bechira, but each and every one of us has a different nekuda sabchira. So if you were born into a frum family, you don't really have bechira in lighting a cigarette on Shabbos, unless you've really gone astray. So if you're born into a frum family, you know there are things that people just don't do on Shabbos. And you don't have to fight your yetzer hara. You know, you don't put on electricity on Shabbos, you don't get into your car on Shabbos. Goes without saying. And it becomes like second nature. There are things which I just can't do. And even in extreme situations, these are things you just don't do, and you don't have to fight your yetzer hara. If you're born into a decent family, and you're a basically decent person, you don't have to fight your yetzer hara not to murder, or not to kill. There are things which you just can do. You don't do, and you can do. Some people, you know, some mobsters really have an assayin when they want to kill someone, and it seems to be so natural to them. You know, if you're a dictator and, you know, it is said in the name of Stalin the head, one death is a tragedy, a million deaths is a statistic, he said. So that is the way some people live their lives. But if you're decent, then you don't kill, and you don't have an assayin, you don't have to fight Yetzirah. So Rav Dessler points out, we all have Bechira, but there's like a ladder, like a scale, like a Richter scale of Bechira, and everybody has another point. One is 2 on the scale of 10, and one is 7, and one is 8, and one is 9. So we all have Bechira, but each one has Bechira on a different level. So the Gaon says, Avodas Hashem is about giving more and more of your Bechira back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So I remember as a child, and this is a memory that will always be with me. I had an uncle that wasn't very frum, and he liked me a lot. And sometimes, you know, once I remember, I don't remember why, but he took me to the airport, and there was a snack bar there. And he told me to choose something. And I saw a little chocolate bar called the Three Musketeers. I don't know whether it's still alive. I had such a taiva. I remember I was a young boy. Nobody was there from my immediate family. I really could do whatever I wanted. And I was very young. And I had a big taiva. And yes, I overcame. I told them, thank you. But I didn't see anything kosher, which I was familiar with. And it was a struggle. It was a struggle. I was a young kid, and I had the opportunity. Rich uncle could buy me a candy bar. And I said thank you, and I didn't take anything. So, I remember that vividly. So we all have Bechira, but you come closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and your level of Bechira goes up, and your Bechira is somewhat diminished, because there are more and more things that you just won't do. And you don't have to struggle with your Yitzharan and not to do them. So as you could all assume today, I wouldn't have a struggle with Three Musketeers. And neither would you. So the Nekudas HaBchira is fluid. So the Gaon says, your Avaida is, Tnu Oiz Lalakim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you a Pechira, give it back to Him. And you need to diminish the scope of your Pechira, so we all will have struggles to the end of our days. V'gimel Dvorim Ein Odom Nitzol Mehem B'Kol Yoyim, Chazal say, Hiru Raveira V'Iyun Tefillah V'Avak Loshon Hara. Only the greatest giants probably became angels. So the Or Sameach in Hilchos Talmud Torah points out that according to the Rambam, angels have Bechira. Angels have Bechira by their very nature. But they're up there in the heavens and they see HaKadosh Baruch Hu's glory. And that is why they no longer have Bechira. If we would witness what they see, neither would we have Bechira. So that is your Avoda. And when Bnei Yisrael were Magdim Nasel Anishma, that is Bitul HaBechira. Because a free person would like to know, what is it that you request? And I will decide, could I give or not? So free people never say Nasa v'Nishma. Free people say Nishma v'Nasa. So you want me to give, then tell me what you expect to receive. And I will decide, am I willing? Could I? Should I? Will I give what you request? So when Bnei Yisrael were Magdim Nasal Anishma, and that was a total bittul of Bechira, because standing by Har Sinai and witnessing HaKadosh Baruch Hu's glory, and after Yetzias Mitzrayim, and after Kriyas Yamsef, in which Rosh Shifcha Aliyah Mashal Aroi Yecheskel Anovi Bekon HaNaviyim, they were elevated to a medreg of bittul of Bechira, and they said, Nasal Anishma, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Mi Gilo Razel Abonai, Loshen Shemalach HaShoros Mishtayim Shaboy. This is the nature of Malachi Yeshoras. They too essentially have Bechira. But being up in the heavens and witnessing what they witness and seeing what they see, they no longer have Bechira. And that was the Madreg of Klal Yisrael. B'shah she'gdimu nasa lenishma. And that is our Avoida. That is our Avoida. Coming closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and having more and more Nesiyonis become to us so natural and so easy to overcome. So we don't have a nesoyin not to kill people. Most of us don't have a real nesoyin regarding Chilul Shabbos or regarding Nevelis and Seifis. And our avoida is to give back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu what He gave us. He gave us Bechira. And as we come closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and grow in our devotion, in our love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in our dedication to Torah and Mitzvahs, we give Him back more and more of the Bechira that He gave us. So Yerosu, we should always be Zoycha L'Hagdim Nasal HaNishma. And the Kotzke Rebbe said, so it is said in the name of the Kotzke Rebbe, Matan Torah was once in history, once in the story of the world, but Kabbalah's Torah could be every day and every moment of our life. So yes, Kabbalah's Torah should be in every day endeavor. And Yerotzon, we should be oimed in all the nesiyonos and come closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We should be zoche b'kura b'yameinu to Yeshua Yisrael and be as Goel Tzedek, b'mheiro v'yameinu. Amen. Thank you.